It didn't take me very long to go, this makes total sense to me. I'm all in. For a lot of people, they can't emotionally handle the shame of the possibility of being duped. We're all frozen. There's just this chronic anxiety in this entire global financial system. It's hard to watch. We've already got a nonprofit set up with River.
Nice.
And River's onboarding tons of nonprofits and churches. What's so, up?
How you doing? I'm doing great. Thank you so much for joining
me. I'm really excited to talk to you. This is a Bitcoin Army member. Do you go by Ben or Benjamin?
Ben. I just haven't changed my...
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is Ben mark. Healy. Yeah, no problem. I know you have to lose that check mark for a little bit if you change your name or your profile picture. So yeah, I'm excited to have you, Bitcoin Army member. You're also a father. You are a pastor. Can you kind of tell us about when you got into Bitcoin?
Yes.
And then also how you found the Bitcoin Army and stuff.
Yeah, so it's kind of a couple different streams together for me. A lot of it has to do with my growing up story and kind of arriving at different places throughout like my own personal financial journey. Just a quick, you know, kind of thing. Grew up in Mississippi, originally from Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Parents didn't have a lot of income. My parents divorced when I was 4. And so there was a lot of just different struggles there with them. And so money for me as a child, and I'm an only child, so money for me as a child kind of represented security in a lot of ways. And so one of the things I've learned as a pastor is that we make these childhood vows as children, and even if we don't like consciously aware of them. And one of them was, I'm never going to struggle financially. And that was just one of those things. So worked hard, and I'm going to talk a little bit how that is not necessarily a healthy childhood vow to have. But anyway, worked really hard in school, went to school. My parents told me at college, they were like, we don't have any money. You can't take loans and you can't work. So I had to have scholarships, and thankfully I was able to get those and went to college. Got married at 21 to Beth, my wife. We just celebrated 25 years. You met Beth in Vegas when we met up with the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Army crew. And we got married. Yeah. And then so we kind of did the Dave Ramsey thing. Like we literally did the cash envelope system. And we tried to live within our means, even to the point to where we were committed to giving. Obviously, we love to give to church and ministry, and even, you know, hey, we're going to save $75 a month, whatever, right? And so we did that, and my father passed away around that time that we got married from a long-term diabetes illness. And, you know, he had a little money, and I mean, just a little, but I immediately started Roth IRAs. For me and Beth, I was like, we're not going to live off this now. We're going to start. So I did the traditional, like, you know, pretty aggressive, like investing, because I was 22 years old, 25 years old. So we did that. And basically fast forward like 20 something years. And, you know, to about a year and a half ago, it would have been about February of 24. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at my returns over a 20-year, what I thought was supposed to be kind of a Dave Ramsey model. And I love Dave Ramsey in the sense that he helps people who struggle with debt, getting out of debt, but I don't think I think he's just scared of understanding intelligent leverage or promoting intelligent leverage, which is a whole different ballgame. Well, anyway, so got my statement and I'm like, man, in 20 years, we've returned about 8 to 9% a year. And at the same time, in parallel, one of my wife's childhood friends is Joel Bungar. And Joel is known in a lot of the Bitcoin space. But anyway, Joel's just preaching on Facebook about the importance of like sound money principles and Bitcoin and all this. And so I've got, this is coming across my Facebook feed. I know this guy. My wife grew up with this guy. I'm looking at my returns on a 20-year investment, and I'm going, and I'm help understanding inflation, and I'm like, not going to make it, you know? And parallel, you know, to all these things, you know, the Lord has been gracious to me to show me not to make a God out of money and those sort of things that are deep and I still struggle with. But at the same time, I want to be wise with what we've been given. I want to be a good steward of that. Give, save children. I've got two kids in college now, two in college.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
great.
So Joel's like preaching this Bitcoin thing, and I start listening to him. And this is crazy, Stacy, how all this convened. March of 24, I'm reading everything Joel's saying. He's recommending, I'm listening to him. And it didn't take me very long to go, this makes total sense to me. I'm all in. So we had a pretty big family event that occurred that impacts us. And I remember sitting down with Beth and I was like, hey, I think we need to think about this. So we jumped onto a Zoom. Joel offered a Zoom. He answered all our questions. Then we pivoted and went into Bitcoin. So that's kind of the story of my personal journey into a sound money standard. Mm-hmm. It just made sense to me. He answered all my questions. I'd listened to all the podcasts, et cetera. So that's how we got there on that journey.
So how did you feel going through the family event that you guys had that at the same time you realized you wanted to go all in? Did it actually make it more of a case that you should? Or was that just feeling like the timing was timing right to you because of that? Or was it feeling like it was just, why did this happen now? Or just everything you're going through, you know, what did it feel like? Like, did it feel like it was meant to be at this time because something, you know, stressful happens in your life? And then did you feel like this was sort of like an answer?
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, one of my convictions and one of the things I understand is safety is a myth. Safety is a myth. And what I mean by that, like the full safety of living in this world, the fullness of safety of living in this world is never going to happen. All right. So what does that mean? That means that you can't just sit status quo and think you're going to be okay. Let's talk about the monetary system. I think it's obvious to people like you and me that you can't just sit in the current Keynesian fiat system, knowing what we know now about that system, inflation, printing, all these things. You go, well, there's no safety there, right? There's the things that the technicals that we know about Bitcoin that go, well, these are better technicals. But at the same time, we also recognize that there's some things that need to happen, like the world, we need adoption and those sorts of things. And so it's really a process of elimination of there's no ultimate safety in this world, but what technicals and is why, what is wise to move into and take that risk. Let me say it like this. Everything is a risk. That's a better way of saying it. There's no safety. Everything is a risk. And so how does that convene with that moment for us as a family? It just kind of reaffirmed it. Right? Because we're like, you plan your life and you have these visions of kind of what your next 5, 10, 20, 30 years are going to be, 50 years are going to be. And you're like, maybe. Right? So it kind of confirmed that for me and for us and kind of went, okay, you know? So that's probably, it ended up affirming and confirming for us where some people are surprised by that. They would say, well, does it make you want to hold back? And I'm like, hold back into what? What am I holding back into?
With Microseed, you can engrave your entire seed phrase onto a durable titanium washer. It's the ultimate backup. Simple, indestructible, giving you true peace of mind and knowing your seed phrase is secured for life. Use my link in the description to get your kit.
Satoshis. So many new styles and fully customizable. Use my referral link in the description or in the comments for 10% off your order. The Bitcoin Advisor, for multi-sig custody solutions to store your Bitcoin, inheritance planning, and peace of mind.
Right, status quo. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you find out these things about the system you thought you were believed to trust, and then that's why you wouldn't want to hold back, because it's just lies, you know? So
it's a process of elimination, right? So you look at, where can I put value? This is why I love Jack Mallers. It's like, I provide value to this world. It's important. It's good. I get a dollar receipt for that work. That's value. But then you go, well, that value is declining. So my value is declining. Where's process of elimination? Where can I store that value for future desires and goals and that sort of thing? You could stick it in real estate. That's where people have done it for years and years. But then that's a whole different system. Or you could go with like this magic internet money and see where it goes.
Yeah, but the reason this magic internet money is so magical is because nobody can change the rules. Nobody can create more of it. Nobody can inflate it like they do with the dollar. And there's nobody that benefits from the inflation like in the fiat system. So it's magical. It's magic internet money, but it is magical because it's a protector for that. You know, it's protection against the thing that you find out is wrong with the money in the world. And, you know, once you see it, you can't unsee it. So it's a huge shift. And for somebody like you, who, you know, you're a pastor and, you know, a lot of people feel when they find out about Bitcoin that it is a spiritual shift for them. I found that very much in common with my guests. So many people have this awakening, or their ego, you know, a disillusionment of the ego. And it's, I think, just, I want to hear your take, but mainly the big picture of that feeling from all the people that, including myself, I've experienced, is the ideals that you were told to believe in, you realize are a lie, and the things you think were important to you before are no longer important to you, the things that you thought mattered, and you realize you were just focused on the wrong things in life. And, and so, yeah, I just want to hear about maybe what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, I was surprised and then not surprised that there are a ton of, well, I'll just say there are a ton of Christians in this space, like they're everywhere. And I was like, this actually makes total sense to me, because we have those biblical principles of a just weight and measure that is good for society, right? It gives us something like we can bank on, pun intended, you know, like, and it highly impacts all sectors of society. And we're passionate about the flourishing of humanity. We want people to grow, and we want them to feel, we want humanity to feel free to be creative and innovative. And you can't do that as well in our current economic system. Now, we as Americans can do that better than most of the world, because we still have the reserve currency of the world. But when I travel to other countries, which I've been able to do, it's like, this is crazy. And so it's the truth and the freedom piece, and the that's very important to me and passionate to me. I think one of the things too in this space that I've observed and that I want us just kind of speak into is motives. So let's say it like this. And I'm a systems guy because I'm a pastor, because when things go wrong, for example, in our church system, it's easy to blame a person, right? That messed up. But as a leader, I read a quote one time that said, leaders in a system don't blame anyone, meaning we kind of have to kind of dial back a little bit. So what do I mean by that? The current Keynesian economic system isn't working, right? The decisions that those in power and authority make come out of that system. And so, you know, is the system a lie? Yes. But I want to be very careful not to ascribe motives to people that are within that system. Are there certain people that are taking advantage of this fiat situation? Absolutely. Are there people who genuinely believe that things can be fixed inside of the current system? Yes. Are they for people? Yes. Are they wrong? Yes. Right. So I listened to the Tucker Carlson, Richard Wyrne podcast. Have you heard that one? That was like last week. He's talking about economics, but basically like he's tracking with all of the economic arguments that a Bitcoiner would make, but he doesn't get to Bitcoin. It's like, you're like, he's right there.
I know.
But he comes back to a banking system and we're sitting there. I've seen the comments on X, like we're sitting there going, there's a fix for this. It's not the current banking system, right?
Yeah, you can't inside the system.
Right. He's genuinely, what I'm saying is he genuinely wants the same things that you and I want, which is the flourishing of humanity. And we want space for people to be creative. We want to engage in long-term, beautiful projects. And the only way we can do that is if we know the money is going to be true 50 years from now, as it is from today. Nobody's freed up to engage in long-term, creative, innovative projects because we don't know what the dollar's going to do. We know it's going to inflate, how much it's going to inflate, how much it's going to release in the system. So we're all frozen. There's just this chronic anxiety in this entire global financial system. And it's hard to watch.
Yeah, people are working multiple jobs trying to just like keep up. And it's up.
They're just trying to keep up. And this is what I tell, you know, like I'm a pastor and most of my church is millennials and below. I'm one of the oldest. I'm 47. I'm one of the oldest. And they're working hard. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like I don't take the route of like, well, if they just worked harder and they saved a little more money. And I'm like, you don't understand, they're priced out of house.
Right.
I snuck in 2004, bought my first house. And I'm looking back on how pivotal that was just for my ability to then buy the next house that I'm currently in. And it's just hard to watch. There's just chronic anxiety. There's this chronic paralysis in the system. But at the same time, fear of moving out of something you don't, into something you don't know, like Bitcoin. And it's at that point, it becomes an emotional thing.
Right.
Right. And that's where I have the opportunity to talk about the paralysis of living in fear. And it has nothing to do with Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
You see?
Well, that's one thing that it's really different, I think, from my upbringing to hear about a church where it's majority young people, because I'm Greek Orthodox Christian. And growing up, all families and kids and everything, but it was a lot of older people, you know, go to church every Sunday. You know, there's a majority of, you know, an older crowd. So it's nice to hear that you have a younger group of people there that you're able to reach. And how do you go about being a pastor, understanding the problems in the world, understanding Bitcoin, knowing their fear, their emotional, you know, anxiety about the future? And you're in a church, you're offering hope. You're offering, you know, when you think of, you know, you go to church, you think about ideas like don't be afraid, don't live in fear, you know, everything is fine, like trust in God, you know, those things. But it's when a lot of the people that you're telling these things to, when they're still in the back of their mind, they're trying to just let go and trust. But it's hard to do that when you're clinging to something that's hurting you, when you're clinging to something that's stealing from you and stealing your time and all that. So how do you go about it in church? Like, do you talk about Bitcoin without talking about Bitcoin? Do you try to convince other, not convince, but, you know, do you reach out to other churches to, you know, what's your day to day? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. So there's a couple of, parallel things. I'd say about half my church knows I'm in Bitcoin, but here's why. We are in the process of establishing our own, what we're calling a Bitcoin stewardship reserve. And that's kind of happening myself and our leadership. We've already, and so once we get that policy written, I've got people in my church who are Bitcoiners who are already stacking, who want to contribute to that as a savings account. We call it like a reserve account. Once we roll that out in the next couple months, then the cat's out of the bag. I'd say about half of my church knows that, like, that I'm into Bitcoin because I've, in my denomination, I'm in the PCA, Presbyterian Church in America, and one of the largest conservative denominations in the U.S. I introduced legislation back in June, well, about a year ago, and it went through several processes, but I think I told you this in Vegas. It went all the way up the ladder to our National General Assembly, about 2,000 representatives there. It was voted down, no surprise, but my goal was to just get the thing on the radar. So what's happened is I'm now working with a nonprofit foundation, and I'm working just a few hours a week because I'm a full-time pastor, a few hours a week educating churches and the leadership of churches in the wisdom of studying Bitcoin, of considering having a Bitcoin reserve, not only that current Bitcoiners in their church could contribute to, but look at how they can use that strategically for those long-term projects that I was just mentioning, right? So that's kind of these things are running in parallel, meaning my local church, some of them know, some of them don't, but that's because I personally do want the number one message that I give to people is the message of Jesus, the message of hope in Jesus alone. Now, having said that, my worldview is that everything belongs to God. And so there's no like area of life that is off limits that he's not deeply interested in. He's deeply interested in my car, you know, and it working. He wants to know. He's deeply interested in my children. He's deeply interested in my marriage. He's deeply interested in our vocations. And so it's not as though I'm pulling them apart. It's just that we're running those things in parallel right now. And then with the local Bitcoin reserve, but at the same time, I'm already working with a lot of churches on education, integration. One of the things that bill gave me the opportunity to do when I was at General Assembly with 2,000 other, you know, leadership and pastors and elders, was to look at them and say, you likely have a Bitcoiner in your church and they want to give that to the church, but they don't want you to sell it. They want you to commit to holding it. And we're helping churches write those policies as fast as we can. So that's kind of where my work is right now. It's a lot. It's going well. I'm very thankful.
That's incredible. And so when you said that God is interested in my car, interested in this, interested in that, like people would want to maybe think, why would God care about Bitcoin, right? But when you think of it as something that the idea of God being truth and, you know, not deceitful, like, you know, I don't know, I would compare that fiat is deceitful and it's full of lies, and God is truthful and it's transparent and it's, you know, loving, and like this whole Bitcoin network aligns more with the idea of harmony and truth and freedom. It's like free will versus control. It's all these ideals that align more with what God would want for people. What if everyone's his children and everyone, and your parent looks out for you and they want what's best for you, wouldn't they be interested in this and be interested in the, you know, the mutual benefit of all humans to not be deceived or like stolen from and lied to and live more of a life of free will and not feeling like they are forced to do things that they don't like. And, you know, thinking of people from church, you know, spiritual standpoint, is If people are created in God's image, God was a creator, and we are, you know, in that image. So we are creative. And when you are stuck in a fiat life, you don't get the chance, like I think you were saying, about being creative and using that skill that we have as a gift that humans have to express that. And when you're stuck in a fiat world, you can't, or you don't have the time or the energy, and you can't be who you should be because it's being trapped and it's not allowed to be set free.
Yes, absolutely. None of us would claim that Bitcoin is perfect, but we can, I think, all affirm that it is a beautiful technology that is and has a lot of potential to free humanity up in a lot of ways that I want for people, right? Now, you could say that with about any, you know, created thing. You know, I want people to thrive in their relationships, right? You can get, a person can get just absolutely locked down in fear, relationships with their family members or their friends. And so I'm interested in freedom across the board for people, for them to live into what you just said, in the image of God, to image God, to be free to image God in those ways. And of course, ultimately, I believe that a human being is most free in connection and relationship and a harmony with God. Obviously, I mean, what I do, like, I believe that is a beautiful spot, the most beautiful spot for a human being to live. And so when you kind of start from there, you begin to see all of these areas of life that God made and he's deeply interested in for us. And money is no exception to that. I tell my pastor friends, I was like, look, some criticism is you should only be proclaiming the gospel. You know, pastor, what are pastors doing talking about money? And I was like, well, we talk about money all the time in budget meetings, you know, honestly, like there's no area. Yeah, there's no area that God is not deeply interested in. I just start there, right?
Well, and especially because you're preaching the gospel, you're telling people, do not be afraid. Those were, you know, Jesus's words, you know, don't be afraid, you know. But all I keep thinking of is, yeah, you're just saying, you're almost trying to, if you don't get to the root cause of what some of these people's worries are, that is something that they can change in their life. Like, again, God gives us free will. We're able to choose our own life and our own path and create the world we want to live in. Like, we are creators, right? So if you don't talk or speak to some of the things that are hurting the people, that it's like you're just saying, turn a blind eye to it, allow it to continue happening to you, and then just wait for things to get better. But it's like you also have this power to change that. And, you know, with Bitcoin, you have power to escape that. You don't have to live in that. You don't have to put your hard work into something that's being taken from you. So it's like you're sort of trying to address the fears that people have. And it's hard to do that because you don't want to sound like you're just talking about crypto and talking about Bitcoin and trying to, like, why are you doing this? You should be just talking. It makes sense. Like, it sounds like, how do you blend those things together? And it's a difficult thing to do, but it just, when you learn about Bitcoin and its ideals and its principles, it aligns so much with truth and it helps and it heals people in society. So it's a difficult job to try to do that, but I think it's so important. And I think one of the things with church is like with Greek Orthodox, like what I am, it's, they're this mentality where they don't ever change. Like, it's super strict. Everything is like from the beginning, they don't change a thing. Like the way you take communion to the way you should dress in church, everything is so strict. So when you think about something, if you were to even try to tell a Greek church about Bitcoin, it would just be, no, we stick to our old ways. That's technology. Technology is, you know, the devil or something. Like, maybe it would be frowned upon, you know, but the principles of it and what it stands for and how it works is something that I think would benefit every religion, every church, every family, you know, savings. Every person would benefit from finding out this truth.
Yeah, I mean, what's really cool is that one of my neighbors is a Greek Orthodox priest. So he and I have had, we come from different spots theologically, we know this, but he and I have had some fun conversations about how the grace of God operates in those ways and moving into people's lives. But anyway, I think that I really want, here's a question I have for you. This is, so do you generally speaking believe that people are doing the best they can do?
Do I believe that?
Yeah.
Do I believe people are doing the best they could do?
Generally speaking.
I do. I think so, because they're doing the best they could do not knowing that there is an open door. I think they're just in the situation that they're in. They're trying, you know, they're hustling, you know, they're trying to provide for their kids, but it's like this maze. It's this maze.
Yes. And I wasn't trying to trick you. I already knew your answer to that question, because this is what makes you a good podcaster. Because if you survey most people, they don't, and they get frustrated with people. And I think what I'm able to see as a pastor is like, there is this chronic issue in the entire system called humanity. Now we're zoning in, you and I are zoning in on this one particular chronic issue, which is this Keynesian economic fiat, you know, system that is just like this overlay, and people are working so hard. And I'm like, and people blame people for this, and they get mad and they stay frustrated and all this. And I'm like, whoa. What if the system is the thing that we need to look towards, right? So that's the reason I asked you that question. I already knew what you were going to say, because I've known you and listened to you well enough to go, she's going to get this. I wasn't trying to trick you, but it's an important question, because in my role as a pastor, it keeps me from becoming bitter when people don't understand. I'm like, hey, this is right in front of you, and they can't see it, Stacy. Mm-hmm. They can't see it. And that's where I go, I really believe God changes people's hearts and enables them to see, you know, as Jesus said, gives them eyes to see and ears to hear. And so I'm just going to continue moving into that space with all of, you know, all of the, you know, desires of freedom and creativity in them and unlocking those things.
Well, that's interesting you say that too, because I love that quote, you know, ears to hear and eyes to see. And it reminds me of how, oh my God, I had a really great point and I'll remember it in just a second. I feel I had full body goosebumps for a second, so I think it threw me off. But I think it's just because, you know, it reminds me of how people, I remembered, I'm good. How, you know how they say that you find Bitcoin when you have a need to know basis, like people that don't need to know won't really go looking for an answer because they think they're okay.
Yes.
The people that, that feel the struggle are the ones that end up finding it. So it reminds me of that other part of the Bible where it's the meek shall inherit the earth.
Yes.
You know, because the people who struggle the most will be the ones who have to look for an answer.
That's right. And right after that, well, very similar to that, Jesus, you know, he's eating with sinners and tax collectors, and the Pharisees come up to him and they're criticizing him for eating with these sinners and tax collectors. And Jesus says, those who are well have no need of a physician, only those who are sick. And he's trying to make a statement there. He's basically telling the Pharisees, you're also sick, but you don't see it. And so you don't need me, but you really do need me. And so the tax collectors and the sinners, they know they need Jesus. They know that. And so he's like, well, I'm just go to the people who know they, and so it's exactly what you're saying.
That's great.
You don't realize it, again, for me, it was looking at these financial statements and looking and going like, and my first thought is I'm just going to have to work an extra 15 years and I'm going to work forever. But I'm saying we're going to have needs when we get older. But I was just saying, no, I'm going to have to work full time like I am. And then Joel's like preaching this Bitcoin thing. And I'm like, let me study this. And then it was like, this is the shot. This is a better path.
Yeah. It's crazy. It actually makes so much sense when you see it, because, you know, you're looking at these things and you're thinking, when you're one of those people on a need to know basis that has to figure out something, you're thinking, is this, like, you wonder if it's just you. You wonder if you're doing something wrong. You wonder if everybody else is doing well in this system and what are you doing wrong? But a lot of people, you know, are feeling this, especially, you know, the lower you are on the financial scale of things, you know, you feel it faster. But it's, you know, the people at the top, again, they don't feel it, but you're right. It's not like they know. It's not like they don't think that they're doing the best they can. They just don't realize that either inflation has hit them yet, and they just don't know that they need, like the Pharisees need a, they don't know they're sick. They don't know the system is sick, and it's hard, but you can't just, they have to be ready. You know, they have to be ready to find that.
Yeah. And I've seen this, this is the thing that Bitcoin requires. It requires humility. It absolutely requires humility. And I have interacted with some boomers who are not humble. They got a lot of money. They're not humble. They don't want to learn because they don't think they need to learn. And then I have some wonderful boomer friends, for example, who do have a lot of money. And I talk about this and they're like, well, I would love to learn about that. And they come to the same realization that you and I come to, as far as like, whoa. But it takes a lot of humility. Mm-hmm. Because for a lot of people, they can't emotionally handle the shame,
yeah,
of the possibility of being duped.
Yes.
They can't face that emotionally.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, we don't have time for you to be shamed about that.
Yeah.
Like, let's just pivot. You know, like.
That's such a great point, because people don't want to be wrong. Even when you talk to people day-to-day basis, like you have people, you hear people having an argument and they just have to be right. They have to prove they're right. They can't, you know, just, it's hard for people to admit they're wrong. And I remember that being part of my journey, was having to admit to myself that I've been wrong about everything, that I've been lied to, and just realizing that, but admitting it to yourself is, that's what breaks you wide open, because it's just, people don't want to.
They can't.
And I'm right in their face. Yeah. You don't want to admit that you're wrong. It's just a really hard thing for people to do.
And yeah. I mean, this goes across. I'm sorry.
It's the ego.
Yes, ego. And I realized that, you know, in 25 years ago, when my wife and I were getting premarital counseling, the pastor said, Ben can win every argument. He just said it. He's like, Ben, you can win every argument. And sometimes you're just wrong. And so there's these moments still where my wife was like, you want to be right, or do you want to have a relationship with me? Which one do you want?
Yeah.
That's a booger question right there, you know? And it's like, the right or wrong of the thing, it, you know, need to be right is that ego test. And Bitcoin requires humility to kind of go, taking responsibility in that moment of going like, okay, this is the system that I think taking responsibility of like, I chose to believe in this system, right? Because you can't take a victim mentality, because then that renders you powerless. And you say, well, this has happened to me. And I'm like, well, yes. And here we are, right? Let's not talk about what should be. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what is, and let's move into what is, take stock of what is, and then go, are you going to continue to align with this that you know is full of baloney, or are you going to move into something here that is way more mechanically, technically, math sound?
With Microseed, you can engrave your entire seed phrase onto a durable titanium washer. It's the ultimate backup. Simple, indestructible, giving you true peace of mind and knowing your seed phrase is secured for life. Use my link in the description to get your kit.
Satoshis. So many new styles and fully customizable. Use my referral link in the description or in the comments for 10% off your order. The Bitcoin Advisor, for multi-sig custody solutions to store your Bitcoin, inheritance planning, and peace of mind.
Yeah. And when you have people who are, you know, choosing which one you're going to do, it's because of what you were saying too, with wanting to choose between, do you want to be right or do you want to have a healthy marriage? Like, do you, the people in the world that, again, don't know that they're stuck in this sick system, they think of it like they need to be right, but we all live in the same world. We all live in the same, just like how a married couple is part of the same house. Like, we all live in the same place, and it's for the good of all people, the good of the household, you know, and a family, to actually agree and have consensus and something that is good for all people. But when it's those people that they have that ego, they have to be right, it can cause stress in the entire house, and it causes stress in the world when you have these people that don't care, you know, they just have to be right, and but eventually it's going to play out the way it will, because we do have an answer now. You know, before we didn't have an answer, and you were forced to live in the world that
yes, you were. Yes. And still a lot of people are. I mean, one of the things, and I'll just kind of, you know, one of the things I'm passionate about in all the spaces I move into, and I'm seeing even in the Bitcoin space, is, you know, kind of holding true to this conviction. Do I believe in Bitcoin? Yes. All right, let's just confine this to the Bitcoin space. Do I believe in Bitcoin? Do I believe in its principles, the technology of it, the math of it? Yes. But when you're interacting with people in the fiat system, I also want them to know that I want relationship with them as well. Because these emotional things pop out on both sides, all over the place, right? There's an emotional passion about Bitcoin, Bitcoiners, where we can look at fiat people and be like, what's wrong with you? Why can't you see this? And I'm just going to go, hold up, cowboy. It's only by the grace of God that you came into this. Mm-hmm. I believe that you were given eyes to see and ears to hear, to go, whoa, so why don't we speak patiently, lovingly, graciously, mm-hmm, towards those who don't understand, right? And hold that line. I can hold the line of believing in the truth of Bitcoin, and I can lean in and say, I'm committed to relationship. Because there's some cancel culture going on in the Bitcoin world, and I'm like, we can't do that. You know, yeah. You can do both. You know, you don't have to sacrifice your conviction about Bitcoin to have a relationship with fiat people, but neither do you have to, you know, sacrifice the relationship in order to stay only in Bitcoin world. I think we can operate in that space. I'm very passionate about that space.
Yeah.
I see that space. That whole thing I just told you has, in a sense, has nothing to do with Bitcoin, but in all of these other spheres that I pastor in, whether it's in marriage, work relationships, yeah, parent-children relationships, that whole paradigm, we want that in this space as well.
That is so true, because when you think of it in all these different aspects, you know, of your life, it's such a great point, because just because you have a happy life or a happy marriage or kids that are a certain way, like you're blessed. You know, you have to think of it like you're lucky. You are grateful that you have this situation. You shouldn't judge others because they don't have the same situation and what they may have done wrong. You don't know their story or where they're coming from. But yeah, the people that have found Bitcoin and you know, have eyes to see and ears to hear, you know, it's a gratitude thing. I feel grateful. You know, even though people think that at this price point, they think that it's so high when they're in the fiat land. But when you understand Bitcoin, you know that this is still so early, and I'm grateful for it. I know many Bitcoiners are grateful for having found it when they did. As long as you just realize, once you realize what it is, you're not turning your back on it, you know?
Yeah. And on that technical point, we're just capturing the arbitrage right now, but let's just say 20 years from now, like, it doesn't matter. Again, if I like Jack Mahler's, he's saying, like, you get paid in this thing and you stick it in this thing that's going to be the same. So in my mind, the benefit, us being quote early, is a deep responsibility. I think I think we should be very thankful that we're catching the arbitrage over the next 10 to 20 years between the dollar and Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, why would I not be continually saving in Bitcoin 50 years from now if it's that one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin, right? Mm-hmm. So for some people who are like, oh, I'm too late, I'm like, wait. You're not too late to store your value in this thing that's not going to inflate. That's going to be true forever.
Yeah.
I just happen to be capturing the arbitrage, and I'm inviting you into capturing that arbitrage right now that mm-hmm. we see.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, when you understand the deflation in Bitcoin, you see that it will always keep growing. So whether or not you capture the gains that early people capture or whatever, you're still protecting your time spent.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a protection from human greed. And human greed is again, the people that are in it and they're able to change it. You know, they such a strong force that people don't even, you know, they can't help themselves, you know. So, but that's why Bitcoin is so great, because it removes that entire aspect. You know, there is no
correct. Yes. And that's a system piece, right? Keynesian economics provides an opportunity for that greed to thrive. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be greed. But Bitcoin, you're exactly right. I think at least the soundness of the money mitigates, right? Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think I was speaking about this with, I was speaking about this with Tomer, and I thought it was an interesting point to bring up right now, because he talks about the act of Satoshi, you know, disappearing and leaving his coins behind. It's, he left, not only he gave humanity a gift by creating Bitcoin and putting it out there, but also he gave us a blueprint of how you should be as a human, as far as like a principle to live by, because he gave, it was the ultimate show of, you know, of, how do you say, like, of not being greedy. Like he pretty much like removed himself from the entire thing. He walked away from it, and that million coins that's sitting there has not been touched, and we could all see that. So it just shows you that this human, whoever he or she or Satoshi was, it's something that we admire. You know, we admire, you know, what was done and how they're able to turn away, because it seems very inhuman. It seems very hard to believe that a human could do that. And it's a very, very, very interesting idea, because we should all, and that's why we admire the creator. We admire how this thing came about, because it could have been from a place of, I want all the glory for creating this, and I want all the fame, and I want all the, you know, to be able to be rich off of it too. But it's none of that. So it actually,
well, we get off into patents and Austrian economics, and you know, there's arguments there. Like there's been tons of people before Satoshi who gave the world things and didn't demand the patent thing. Mm-hmm. Be fun if we kind of got back around to that mode, you know?
Yeah, I know, but it's like almost like part of what we were talking about was like, I was almost thinking, did Satoshi lose the keys on purpose because he knew that human greed would would play a role, and it would be irresistible to, you know, to take it, so that it would not grow the way it did because of that. But then when you think of the word on purpose, if it was known how this thing would grow in the future and how, what it would become, it was almost on purpose that he walked away and didn't lose the keys. Because if you knew that it would be what it's going to be, it's a crazy thing to think about. He says it.
Yes.
And it was really,
yes.
But yeah, it's just something that the morals to live by, I guess, you know, is
well,
something
yeah.
you look up to in a way.
Yeah. And maybe I think I'm also, I've interacted with some wealthier Bitcoiners who are coming into like, is this like, I have a lot of Bitcoin, I am very, very wealthy, is this it in life? And so it's leading to those bigger questions. Maybe some of that has been at work in some of those earlier mm-hmm. folks, where it's like, okay, you have a pile of Bitcoin, now what? Mm-hmm. You know, there's this famous Tom Brady Super Bowl interview after he had won three or four Super Bowls, and he said after that last one, I think it was the third or fourth, and he was like, is this it? And you and I'd be like, that's amazing. You have arrived at in life. And he's like, and there's so many stories like that, right? We know of like, okay, you got what you want. Is there more?
But that's where I think it comes. Yeah, I think that's where it comes into play, where it feels rewarding as a Bitcoiner to be, okay, you have the freedom of your time to be able to do something that makes you feel good. So even though you have
certainly
wealth, you can contribute that time to people that actually feels like rewarding. But I think some of the people that get to the point where in fiat world, where you get to this high level where you've reached all these goals, you reached all these monetary goals that you ever aspired to get to, you also think that you're working kind of, I hate to say, like a slave, because these people, you know, even football players or professional sports players make so much money, but they dedicate their lives to that. So it's not like they have the freedom to do as they choose creatively with their life. They're focused on this one thing. They spend all their time doing it. And maybe other areas of their life don't flourish because they do have all this money and they can buy whatever they want. But it's not like they feel fulfilled. You know, you're almost just finding stuff to spend the money on or things to go out and do because you're just, you know, you're trying to fill some kind of void, you know? So with Bitcoin, when you have freedom of your time and it's growing and you don't have to spend, because even if you think about doctors, like I had a doctor on recently too, and he was thinking about that too. I worked hard. I put in the work. I went to school, became a doctor. But then he started to realize the incentives of the pharmaceutical industry and all this stuff. And, you know, it's like he was still trying to figure out a way to preserve the money that he worked hard to make. And it's just, you know, being a doctor is time consuming. You know, you're spending a lot of your time working and learning to get towards that. And once you do that as your actual career, it's not like you could work 2 days a week and go do whatever else you want in your free time. You have to dedicate that time. So yeah, you have a lot of money, but you also don't have a ton of freedom, where I think Bitcoin is different.
Yes, agree.
Yeah, I went on a rant there. I'm so sorry.
No,
I was
no, like, no. It was good. It was beautiful. I'm like, affirm.
Thank you. Affirm, yeah. I mean, it's great. And I'm glad. I don't want to ever sound like I'm just ranting, you know, but sometimes it's great. It's nice when you have ideas that spark something in me and vice versa. So it's just, that's why I love talking to Bitcoiners and having all these thoughts. And one thing I think is interesting that I wanted to share is in my church, you know, I know you said you have that Greek, you know, priest that lives near you, but sometimes when I'm in church, you know, and I don't go every Sunday, I'm one of those people, I hate to say it, I'm sorry, but I don't go every Sunday.
I'm not like the church police. So, you
know. Okay. I love the ideals of the church, but I think with me, it's so, I don't know. I teach my kids what I want to pass on to them, but I don't go every Sunday, but I go for, you know, major holidays and stuff. But when I used to go all the time, and especially now as a Bitcoiner, they pass around this tray and everyone puts fiat, you know, they put dollars in there. And I don't know. I just, ever since I became a Bitcoiner, I just think like, it's like this dirty fiat, you know, this money that's been, you know, drugs and, you know, who knows what, where it's been, all the places in the world where it's traveled. And it's just like, you're putting this thing in this like whole, like this church where we're all, you know, donating. And at the same time, it's like a dirty fiat in multiple ways. It's not dirty just because of where it's been, but also because of how it's corrupted, you know? So just seeing this basket of dirty fiat, I just think Bitcoin is such a cleaner way to send value to the church without having to interact with this dirty paper, you know?
Yeah, I think you can be faithful in the current system and we can install a parallel system. That's true. What I'm trying to do.
True. You know? Yeah. I don't want to totally say no.
No.
But I could see a future where, you know, I feel like a lot of it is far down in the future, who knows when, but I could see a future where that isn't, it is like cash, like digital cash, like the way Bitcoin is, doesn't have to be a middleman taking a cut, like the current credit card companies and all this stuff. So yeah, the future could change. It could be more digital, and it's not a bad thing if it's on a free system and a sound money system. But currently, yes, until we get to a point in the future where that becomes more, you know, common, yeah, you have to have parallel systems in place. And do you think that, like, so what you're doing with the policy, can you explain more about that?
Yeah, so basically what we're trying to do is, okay, think long term, mm-hmm. right? So I feel like the soundness of Bitcoin now frees us up to think long term about things. For example, most organizations have 5-year, 10-year, 25-year strategic plans. Mm-hmm. The church is no exception to that. Like, we may need to, like right now, we're a church plant. We've been meeting for 8 years. We meet in an elementary school. So obviously, we would like to get into a space where we can not only meet for worship, but do all sorts of things, right? So we'd like to move into that space. Well, let's say we came up with a 10-year plan for that. Well, based on a fiat system, that's pretty daunting to think about. Okay, we got to raise, I don't know, $2 million in today's dollars or 5 years from now dollars, or what is that dollar going to look like? And so for us, we're committed to, we're asking people to give to the budget that's getting dispersed, you know, monthly, right? It comes in, it goes out to ministry and stuff like that. Well, Bitcoin is an opportunity for us to establish this savings account, calling it a reserve account, and we don't have to worry about it going down in value. In fact, the earlier we are, we might catch that arbitrage that we've been talking about, right? Or if there's going to have to be an arbitrage, or this ball game's over. But let's just say so what we're doing is we're asking people, if you would like to contribute on top of that monthly helping, you know, church operations, mm-hmm. we're going to establish this reserve, and we've already got a nonprofit set up with River, a nonprofit account.
Nice.
And River's onboarding tons of nonprofits and churches. In fact, we're recommending them. And so that's what we're going for. It's just, so I already know some Bitcoiners not only in my church, but even outside of our church, who love what we're trying to do as a church. And they're like, you know, one called me last March. They're like, hey, I'm thinking about, I'd love to give y'all some Bitcoin. And I'm like, just stack it. We got our account, but we're going to cement our policy in the next couple of months. And then between whenever you want to donate, then you get the dollar credit at that moment of donation for your tax purposes. And it's going into our church, and we're committed to holding it for 4 years. Of course, unless these major things trigger, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, but committed to holding it for these capital reserve purposes. And so that's the way we're doing it.
So when you do it with River, is it a multi-sig setup?
Right now, we're gonna let them hold and put the force field on, but we are building out. I'm in conversations with two other organizations about how we can multi-sig that well, or collaborative custody that well. I'm not really worried about it right this minute. You know what I mean? It's not a ton of money that we, but once it grows, so I'm in a Christian Bitcoin group again with the foundation that I'm working with, and we're troubleshooting that in real time right now.
Yeah, there's something good, because you have to figure that part out, but it's good that you said that you have it somewhere with River, that you have a force field around it. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but that's great. You know, it's
they just time lock it. That's how I have a small portion of my stack with risk in a force field. Just means nobody can move it on chain. Nice. You have to click to unlock it. So you activate the force field. You can set how much you can withdraw a week if you want. You can set it at zero. So you can say, in other words, let's play out a wrench attack. Somebody comes up to me and they're like, give me your Bitcoin. And I'm like, well, here's some Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But when I click this button unlock, it's going to be 5 days before I can access it. So you want to come back in 5 days or...
Yeah.
So, and it that's already a feature on River.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And so time locking, it is a thing where, like, let's say for people to be able to send, let's say to, you know, if you want to save Bitcoin for your kids, where you wouldn't be tempted to sell it or touch it or anything, you could just time lock it for a future.
Well, it's not really a time lock. It's just, It's a 5-day time lock.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, I've seen some stuff on X with Eric Kaysen talking more about, there's time lock stuff out there. I'm not very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. But for my kids, I just hold the credentials.
Right. Yeah. And
then mine are in college, so I hope to be able to give them that, you know, to help them start.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yes.
And that's why I think that, you know, I think going forward for organizations and whatever you're doing to have these talks about the best way to do it going forward. And I don't know if this helps at all. I don't know if you've seen any of my posts, but I think that there are a few things being done where it comes to groups of people holding Bitcoin as it grows, right?
Yes.
But there's companies that, you know, we hear about treasury companies every other day opening up. And what you think about even as a parent when you have kids is, you know, I love self-custody. I've always been doing self-custody. But what I've learned from Peter Dunworth and the Bitcoin Advisor is about that collaborative custody and multi-sig. And I think it's
I use Bitcoin Advisor.
Oh, you do?
I do. Yes. Isn't for part great? Of my for stack. So one thing I love about them is they... Bitcoin Advisor with an E, Advisor. So like I got in, is that one you're talking about?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I use, so one of the things I love about them is they talk about a diverse risk profile. Mm-hmm. And so I have a diverse risk profile. I have some with Bitcoin Advisor, you know, it's a Theia Vault. So I have no problem with that. I have some in total multi-sig custody. Mm-hmm. I have some in the, I know it's a lot to keep up with, but it's not really, because if you diversify your risk profile, you're like, well, if I lose this, I still got this. Or if this happens to this, I still have this. And so.
And I like that you can have that advice from the group of people. I like that they can advise you, you know, right? But I like they also, because of the multi-sig, again, if somebody were to come up to you and say, give me your key doesn't do anything without the
company. I can't do it. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, Holly works for them, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's where I first, you know, when I first talked to her, she was talking about, you know, she is a Bitcoin advisor. She works for the company and she knows Peter. And I think it's incredible. And just hearing from Peter and from some more of the
people. Luke got me into it. So Luke Broyles is the one who got me into it.
Great. Okay.
I met Luke in Dallas and I talked to him and he was like, yeah, this is what. And so that's how I got into it.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you met him in Dallas? Okay.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
BitBlock Boom.
It's an important solution because when you have a church or a company or whoever, you know, first of all, for inheritance planning, it's super important because I think when people have Bitcoin, you don't want something, God forbid, to happen. And then nobody has access to this thing. But also to have, let's say, a treasury company come out, they need multi-sig because you can't have one person in charge of the keys that run off with the money. And then what are you going to do? So you have to have a solution like this in order for more adoption.
So there's this layer that you and I are on, which is like this personal, like kind of Bitcoin advisor layer. But then there's another layer of what's called multi-institutional, multi-sig custody, where you actually shard the keys and you have a quorum, M of N quorum, that has protocol that has to be met. And so that is the level that I'm helping, because I know a couple of organizations that help on the institutional level. And they actually, the charge is a little less, but that's just because you're talking about a larger stacks, right? Than you and I, kind of that level.
Yeah.
But for our level, I think diversifying your risk profile is important.
Yeah. Well, that's so incredible to hear that you're doing things like that. And you know all about the institutional level, you know, sharding. I had no idea about that. So that's amazing to hear. And I'm just happy. It makes me feel that, you know, with Bitcoin going forward, when you, you know, tell people to get Bitcoin, you could just feel safer that there's options like this and you could give them good tools to use to be able to store their Bitcoin in a way that's...
So I'm a BitKey fan too.
A BitKey? Yes, you are? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so Joel got me on the BitKey, so I've got, you know, it's multi-sig again. And so if you come up to me, I'm like, I don't have my, can't do anything.
Yeah.
So for family members especially,
I think it's great because they even do have beneficiaries on there. They have inheritance kind of planning on that too.
Yep.
And I know that some people were just thinking when I had shared that video about it, some people didn't love that I was promoting it because they think, oh, it's not your typical, cold storage. You know, this is something that people are just promoting because it's new and they're making money. But I thought it was a great solution. I think it's a solution when you hear about our like friend that lost Bitcoin, and it's a scary feeling. It's a scary thought to think that could happen. And it didn't just happen to him. It happens to others. So it's something that gives you, you know, some peace of mind that it's a collaborative custody situation is kind of the way of the future. So I'm glad you like that too. And it's just different people for every situation. Like some companies.
And again, right? I don't have all of my stack with one of those situations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, but they are simpler than a 3 of 5 cold card Sparrow setup, which I also highly appreciate and use and recommend. But again, it's just it's diversifying your risk profile, which I wished our friend had done, you know, diversified that risk profile. Mm-hmm.
And then I think
I'm a big proponent of Unchained. That's where Roth, you know, they have good Roth IRA products. So,
And Unchained works with the Bitcoin advisor, and they work together to hold those keys with people. So it's incredible to see what's being built to help people not lose Bitcoin. And I love to think of even how Peter said, like, I've never lost one Bitcoin, you know, all the years that he's been helping people do this. So that's incredible to hear, because it is sad and it can be a scary feeling, and why some people try to avoid Bitcoin or not allocate too much to it, because they're afraid of, I think if self-custody is the ultimate way to hold your Bitcoin and they don't diversify their risk profile and they think about cold storage only, it can be a very scary thing that people try to avoid, you know, even though it's the real gift of Bitcoin. But I think multi-sig gives you that. So I think it's great that you know about all this, and I'm really happy.
Yep.
I think it's something more people should be aware of. So I'm looking forward to hearing about all the work you're doing in the space. And I am so happy to hear that you're pushing policy forward and you're out there doing this stuff and you're creating awareness over it. And you're helping your church realize in your own creative way of how to bring Bitcoin into it without literally talking about money. You have a great way of speaking and reaching people. And I'm excited to see what you do with it and how you're helping your community and, you know, other communities.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Stacy. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I highly agree with Pierre Richard when he was like, we need more podcasters. Some people don't understand that. But the point I think he's making is we all have different networks of people, and we're going to reach more people with a ground game like this. So I really appreciate your courage to step into this space. And I'm really glad that I'm watching your subscriber count climb by the second. And I think that's wonderful for the entire Bitcoin community, especially for the Army. Really, really thankful for that.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that you're excited about it. And I'm glad that you you can see that it takes a leap. You know, it takes a leap to just, you know,
takes a lot of courage.
And to, you know, not be afraid to make mistakes and just to get started, you know, because there is somebody that I didn't think people would want to listen to me either, but here we are, and it is growing, and people like to hear not just me, but you guys, you know, so they love to hear what you have to say. And it's just such a nice conversation. It's kind of, I don't know, I just think really refreshing to hear just so many different perspectives just about how they view the world where they came from. So thank you again. Thank you for joining me. And I can't wait to share this.
Awesome. Thanks, Stacy.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay.